So nice to sit together. And Carlita, thanks for ringing the bell. Today, I'm going to pick up where we were a couple weeks ago. For those of you who were with Juliana last weekend, I hope that was lovely. And we've been the last 7 weeks-ish moving through the book by Ajahn Sutito called Paramis Crossing Life's Floods. And it's an exploration of the 10 perfections of the heart. And for those of you just joining us for the first time, the 10, we'll see if I can list them. It opens up. The first parami is of generosity, Donna, integrity, Sila. I don't know if I can do it in order, but generosity, integrity, wisdom, energy, wise use of energy, truthfulness, patience. And today we're going to be looking at resolve. And the quote that's often, I'll share it. And I spoke about resolve in August. So there may be a little bit of overlap, but hopefully not too much. But this quote that many of you know, until one is committed, there is hesitancy, the chance to draw back, always ineffectiveness. Concerning all acts of initiation and creation, there is one elementary truth, the ignorance of which kills countless ideas and splendid plans. That the moment one definitely commits oneself, then providence moves too. All sorts of things occur to help one that would never otherwise have occurred. A whole stream of events issues from the decision, raising in one's favor all manner of unforeseen incidents, meetings, and material assistance, which no man could have dreamed would have come his way. I have learned a deep respect for one of Goethe's couplets: "Whatever you can do or dream, you can." Begin it. Boldness has genius, power, and magic in it. Begin it now. This is William Hutchinson Murray from the Scottish Himalayan Expedition. And I wanted to open with that one because that is such a phrase that comes to my mind when I think of resolve and commitments, or this notion of before one is committed. And with a parami of resolve, there's this quality also of an invitation to commit. And it's and what I appreciate about the Buddhist teaching in general, it's like in this moment, in the next moment, and that the sort of push for enlightenment really is just in this moment. And again, to mention Sylvia Bornstein, we were talking once, and she had said that there in the beginning days of Spirit Rock and our sister center at IMS, there was a real push towards enlightenment. We're going to sit, and we're going to get enlightened. And she said, sort of reflecting back, these aren't quite her words, so I'm going to be paraphrasing, but she sort of wishes in a way that there was just a softer emphasis on how do we be kind? How do we, again, for her phrase, how do we meet this moment as a friend? How do we befriend ourselves, which I think is one of the hardest tasks. And then what happens, the unfolding, but this idea of the capital E enlightenment is some far off land to be able to pull it like, no, it's right here. It's that moment of when we're sitting like, oh, wait, I'm thinking about my dog. Can I come back to the breath? That's a moment of enlightenment, these small moments. And part of the resolve I would weave in is this ability to catch it. Yeah. Catch the moment where there's ease, catch the moment where there's a delight, catch the moment of committing to the practice. And in so doing, there's a resolve just to have this awareness of the small enlightenments, the small triumphs, really. I'm going to share a little bit from the book Crossing the Floods, which, as many of you know, is available as an ebook online. I looked at Abhayagiri's website today, and you can order it as a hardback. But I'm going to share a little bit about from his words. So wise resolve supports strengthening according to feedback, interest, and capacity. It's not a blind doggedness. It does, however, mean that you can put aside alternatives and stay with their central aim. The end result is stronger, is a stronger, more skillful mind. I'm going to pause there. A stronger, more skillful mind. And how I take that to mean is that a mind, one that we're not so at the whim of, the mind is like ping pongs all over the place and worries about this and then worries about that and winds us up and overwhelms us and it stresses us out. I speak from experience. But when we can have a mind that's just weak, understand how to shape it more, how to corral it. Like, no, sweetie, don't go there. And we're not going to think about this, but we're going to commit to paying attention to the breath. We're going to commit to a loving kindness practice. We're going to commit to viewing our actions through a lens of, or thoughts, words, through the lens of, is this for my benefit? Is it for the benefit of another? Is it for the general benefit of others? Beautiful framing, a beautiful lens, and but also can serve as like, what are those things, like bumper lanes on a bowling alley? Like, oh wait, is this for my benefit? This thought I'm thinking, is it my benefiting me? Is it benefiting another? Is it for the welfare of others? Often not. And just being able to catch and be like, okay, then can I make another choice? Which is why this ability, when I opened up in the arriving sit of like, can we just watch the pattern of the mind? Because in that observing, there becomes the opportunity to notice, oh, there's choice. In that pausing to see, oh, this thought's here, a choice, a pause, noticing, pause, do I want to keep thinking this thought? And even having a resolve to pay it enough attention to create that that rest note, that pause, to then enable a choice. Yeah, so it's really about just slowing down. When the mind can go so quickly, when the world goes so quickly, when the news feeds come so quickly, and we can be so reactive to things. Okay, stop. Disengage, slow down, take that breath, pick back up. It means the skillful mind, but it means getting over the first hurdle, the idea that lasting development can occur quickly and with little effort. Those of us who have been sitting for more than 10 minutes know it requires effort for more than 2 minutes. Frequently, we find ourselves presented with many options, so it's more likely that we'll get exactly what we want. It sounds good, but the multi-option scenario can lead to option paralysis. You don't give due time and effort to change in yourself, and you go on the ongoing sneaky feeling that if you'd only done this or done that, sat this retreat, sat that retreat, done this, married this person, married another, you would be better off. So resolve comes in late in the list of perfections, because to make a wise resolution requires a mind that has sampled, practiced, and received the benefits of generosity, virtue, and rest. And then you know what a useful commitment and its results feel like. So again, embedded in this is this being able to slow down, have the mind not reach out to grab onto, like, I'm going to commit to this, which we do. And we can live in sort of the dominant culture of telling us, like, strive for goals and move towards the goals and achieve. Yeah, maybe. I was speaking with someone yesterday who was so conditioned to do well and went to an excellent school and got an excellent job. And a young person still in their 20s and asking, oh, actually, this, I'm not actually happy. And that realization of that's not where happiness comes from. Yeah, when we sort of intuitively know this, and the older we are, we realize, like, oh, right, all these markers that I thought I had to meet aren't what engenders a sense of happiness, by which I'm equating sort of ease, contentment, balance, these abiding in these paramis in a way. Where do we rest? It's like, oh, so much is watching the way the mind goes out and grabs, the way the mind goes out, it pushes away or gets restless. And some of you realize I'm talking about the hindrances. Yeah, that which clouds the heart, obstructs the mind. Again, it's the gripping, the pushing away, the restlessness in the body, the anxiousness, restlessness in the mind. It's sort of sister hindrance of sloth and torpor when the mind is really dull, the body's really tired. And then the one that never seems to go away, doubt. What am I doing? And this is stupid. Is this really going to help? Those unhelpful doubt. And that these hindrances can really take hold. And we can and spin us out in whatever flavor they create, and they can be really subtle in our sort of day-to-dayness of our lives. But this awareness of, oh, there's a grasping here. Can I let go? And in the Metta Sutta, the line of it's funny, I have to sort of sing my way there. It is said to be the sublime abiding by not holding to fixed views. We are not reborn into this world, to shorten it a little bit, but that way that we can get concretized to a view, this is right, and notice my fist, it's like, well, it's really tight. that what we can commit to are these truths. And Carlita mentioned this when we were speaking earlier, that the Buddha's words of hatred never ceases through hatred, but by love alone is healed. Yeah. That's something we can trust. That's reliable. That's the truth. We try it out, right? As the Buddha was very clear in the Ahipassika, go, come check this out. Do these practices work for you? If not, okay, let it go. But keep trying. And so this investigative process of what works, what does allow there to be an ease in the mind, and can we commit to that which works? It's the notion that whatever we're doing with the mind or with our bodies, our actions, we're always practicing something. Yeah, we're committing a neural pathway to a certain way, then we're sort of stuck on that neural pathway, the default neural network, until we really work to step out of that conditioning, the patterns, the habits that come so strong. And being, again, using this capacity to flex and awareness. Oh, I'm caught in a habit. Is this habit serving me? Is it serving another? Is it for the general welfare? So coming back to Ajahn Sutito's words, in a way, strengthening my resolve, it has made me ask deeply, do I want to encourage all this restlessness? Do I want to encourage all the clinging or the aversion? Do I want to have a mind that can't settle and that needs continual propping up or that needs continual distraction? Yeah. And after years, he writes, after years of following my impulses, I felt so oversaturated. And the mind, when there's an agitation, it wants relief. Yeah. And that can be one way of relieving is what we just spent 30 minutes doing, is breathing, paying attention. And it's not always easy to call upon that. The relief might just be picking up the phone or taking a drink or watching Netflix or all the sort of easily accessible distractions. Okay. Just noticing that. And then when we're in that, when we've engaged in that kind of distraction, we're like, is this helping me? Is this leading? Is this onward leading in the way? Is it onward leading to a place of ease, to a place of balance? Is this stressing me out? Or am I so checked out, I've kind of lost connection with myself? So I would sort of embed that as another resolve. Can we stay connected to ourselves through these really challenging times, which we've been in forever, but they seem like more and more keeps happening for us to practice with as opportunities to hold on to a sense of balance, hold on to ourselves, hold on to our own compassion. In this chapter, there's a bit. So I've shared this quote before, but I feel like I could read it every day and it would be helpful. So bear with me if you've heard it before. Compassion is a wonderful idea when you read about it in a book. But meeting one's personal dreary muttering mind with an unflinching and tender heart is more demanding than experiencing compassion for the starving people in the world. When one thinks of the starving millions, that readily inspires compassion. But when you take away the worthy cause, you see that the nature of the mind is to need something to engage with. And then you feel what it's like if there's nothing interesting or worthwhile to do. The mind gets moody, bored, lifeless, agitated, I would add. And then you have to learn to simply hold it as you would a baby, holding, rocking, bearing with it, listening to it, companioning it, sitting with it. This is great for strengthening and broadening the heart, building up tolerance and letting go of conceit. Goes on a little bit that to develop resolve is to be with the raggedness, the chaos, the disorderliness of suffering, without the irritation, to open up to the woundedness, and he writes, to open up to the woundedness and wackiness of my own karma, as well as other people, and to experience compassion rather than judgment. And that this compassion is something we can all share at any time, no matter whether we're up or down, or whether everybody else is up or down. And I feel like we're in a world where a lot of things are upside down. We can all share in it. The happiness that derives from pleasure isn't something we are designed for as human beings. It's not sustaining. It doesn't last. We can experience little bits of it, but it's sporadic. The uplifted attitude of compassion is more our measure. Compassion is the only way to hold the world. I would also add, compassion is the only way to meet the world and to meet ourselves. It is the intention to replace the contraction and the agitation we experience around pain. Internally, our own pain, the pain of those we love, the pain in the world, of which there's little shortage of, to meet this with an openness. Sometimes there are things we can do, sometimes there are not. But when we're identified with action and responsibility, there's a stress in the heart, the stress of having to make things work or to change things. When we get it right in a holistic way with regard to self and others and towards nirvana, we can avoid the pitfalls of getting stuck in trying to be good and dutiful. So it's pulling back from the energy that wants to propel us. I have to do something, or I need to change this, whether it's changes about myself, changes about my life circumstances, changes outer world. Maybe, right? And I think this is, can be kind of one of the shadow pieces of the practice of, well, if I sit and meditate enough, I can withstand anything, I can tolerate anything. And this is not a practice of becoming a doormat. It's the wise discernment is very much a foundational piece of this practice. And in this wise resolve of what's the skillful move or the wise response, or is this a benefit to myself, to another, to the greater world around me? And so watching what I think, and I've experienced is sort of the trap of, well, let me, and I'll just be transparent. When I was going, before I decided to make go through the divorce, I was like, I was sitting so many retreats, like, can I get to a place of being equanimous and let go of my preferences and make this marriage work? And at some point, like, that was just such a trap. Like, there was a wise discernment of, this isn't for my benefit, nor for my ex-husband's, nor for my daughter. And sort of to make that choice, not from a reactive place, but not believing that I can transcend any horrible situation through practice. So wise as we hold on to the wise discernment in terms of paying it, that's part of the conversation in terms of what we commit to. Yeah, is this serving me? And allowing there to be a dropping down into what that question actually is. We'll get to that more in a minute, but it's not the react, the way we might react to that question. So like, well, let's have some time for reflection and a settling into that question, sort of living into that question. Over time, he writes, my resolve energy has simplified and calmed to one of sustaining the attitude, may this action or thought be for my welfare, the welfare of others, and leading to peace. And I would say leading to peace within my own life, with those around me, into the world around us. I'm going to share a poem. Well, first, this from the Buddha, therefore, in the teachings on resolve, there are four grounds for resolve, sort of healthy things to commit to or to work with. Again, I want to kind of come back to emphasizing that the commitment to resolve, it's really, again, in this moment. We can make a commitment, I'm going to practice an hour in the morning and an hour in the evening. Beautiful. This is sort of something else. This is, as I'm working with it for myself, the resolve sort of internally, how do I meet myself? And what do I really want to resolve to in terms of where my mind's energies go? So the person, the four grounds for resolve for wisdom, truth, clarity, truth is the next one, and then a relinquishment of that which does not serve. So renunciation is one of the paramis. And by that, it's releasing that which does not serve. So in that question, is this serving me? No. Okay. Can I let it go? Can I put it down? Can I put it down for a moment? Yeah. Again, having the bar low enough that we can feel successful. It's not, I'm going to put it down, never touch it again. That can be overwhelming. But again, just in this moment, is this thought, is this habit, is it serving me? No. Huh. Okay. Can I make a different choice? And then calm, but resolve to calm. So when we can get caught in a sense of overwhelm, just noticing, what's the mind doing? For myself, I notice my mind is spinning. Okay. Hand to the heart, hand to the belly, breathing into the hands and allowing there to be a reset that can come through a focusing on the breath. So Mary Oliver's mysteries, yes. Truly, we live with mysteries too marvelous to be understood. how grass can be nourishing to the mouths of the lambs, how rivers and stones are forever in allegiance with gravity, while we ourselves dream of rising, how two hands touch and the bonds will never be broken, how people come from delight or the scars of damage to comfort, to the comfort of a poem. Let me keep my distance always from those who think they have the answers. Let me keep company always with those who say, look, and laugh in astonishment and bow their heads. And that's something I could commit to.
Yeah.
The company, keeping company with those who say, look, and laugh in astonishment and bow their heads, and knowing the difference. Yeah. From when we're with people who come from a very different vantage point of having all the answers or knowing that rigidity, yeah, a sense of openness and flow and ability to be available, to wonder, to to wonder. And when we're more shut down and concretized in our beliefs, and that robs us of our of the opportunity to be moved and to be connected to others and to be connected to ourselves.
Let's do an exercise.
So I'm going to invite you to close your eyes and kind of recall your energy back into your own being. I'm doing this a lot today with hands to the heart as a way of calling all parts of you back home. And again, letting your attention rest in the body. And I want to ask the question, and when, if an answer comes, or there may be many that come at the same time, just to sort of notice what comes. Sort of the question of what really matters to you. And just notice kind of what pops up. And maybe different answers, and almost like if the answers can be like flowers in a wildflowers in a meadow. And then maybe just one or two things come, or maybe this eruption of beautiful flowers. What really matters to you? It may be certain values, it may be people, it may be work that you do, books that you've read, a way of being in the world. Just sort of keep repeating this question and just kind of notice what comes. What really matters to you? And as you watch, if different answers are appearing, whether they're in the form of wildflowers or not, notice, is there a pattern? Are these answers sort of grouped in a certain way? What matters most deeply to you? What's important to you? And as you kind of survey what maybe one or two answers that came, what maybe again a field of answers, pick a few or pick one. And I might nudge a little bit to, not to game it, but this question of, how do you want to show up in the world? Does this matter to you? And if so, how would you most like to show up? When you're in a place of buoyancy and light, when the heart feels full and connected, how do you most want to show up in the world? So asking to consider this from a place of feeling very well resourced. connected and loved. That might not be how you're feeling right now. So there's an invitation here to feel into imagining, feeling profoundly resource connected light. How would you want to show up in the world from this place? What does that feel like? How might you move? What might your posture be like? And can you allow there to be a resolve to feel into this, have an embodied sense? This is how I want to show up in the world. With love, with kindness, truthfulness, patience, equanimity, delight. Permissions. I kind of played with this in a moment-to-moment way. This is how I want to show up, knowing it's not. We're not going to do it all the time, so there's just an ease here. But this gentle commitment of wanting to show up such that my thoughts, words, and actions are of benefit to myself, to others, to those around me, with full permission to fail as we will, and then we course correct. And what might it be like to allow this to be the guiding star that we can keep orienting to when we feel stressed, overwhelmed, anxious, terrified? Oh, right, this. This commitment through words and actions and deeds to be of benefit to myself and others in the world around me. So I'll stop there and thank you for your kind attention.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.